This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Check, check, check.
We back. It's a new year.
A lot.
We back a lot.
A lot.
What's going on, man?
Nothing. I hear you. 41 Savage.
A lot. It's January.
It's a new year. It's January. Welcome to 2019. Hip Hop Grew Up. We back. What's up?
Sitting, man, and been renovating the house. It's different when you're not at school every day.
I saw you post. You got rid of your old furniture.
I did.
You got new furniture coming in.
Tomorrow.
So you're starting fresh.
Wifey.
Yeah, my wife wanted me to get new furniture too.
Then you will.
Yeah, just not yet. Look, right. I gotta postpone it. But it's winter break. We, as educators, we have this amazing time where we get 2-3 weeks off. We had two, right?
We had
two solid weeks off.
16 days.
16 days. How many working days? 10 working days?
10.
But we got some weekend time in there. So it's good to be on winter break and kind of reassessing what we're doing for the new year, figuring out what new ambitions we're going to have. This is when people make their New Year's resolutions.
Right.
They sign up to gyms. I'm guilty of that. I wanted to sign up to a CrossFit gym.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a little bit far from me. I don't know if I'm going to do that this year.
I think winter's a really good time to exercise.
Yeah. And you were saying why? What?
I don't know. It's just a really good time to have warmth in your body.
Yeah.
It's a good time to move because otherwise the cold doesn't feel good.
When you're not moving.
Nah.
Yeah, I was pretty good on the workout thing. And as soon as it gets cold, you know, which in Texas isn't that bad, but
nah.
Cold enough to be like, oh, I'm not going to run. I'm going to skip it. And I did that all through winter break. And now, you know, after eating 20 pounds of tamales,
mm-hmm.
We got to do something different. Tamales went hard, and my stomach is suffering.
Yeah, I've had a really lazy December and January compared to last year, but it's mm-hmm. changing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was stretching, doing a little calisthenics today. It's not the new year. It's more like just having time to reflect. If it was in March, I'd probably come out the same way. In fact, spring break.
Reflection time. This is one time when people reset. And then this is also the time when like people have like the greatest or the top 10 list, right, of the year.
Right.
Obama published his, you know, his top songs, top books, top films. And I decided to be like, oh, okay, his songs, you know, I heard all of them, except for like one or two. Books, definitely need to catch up on the book reading. But he had a lot of great recommendations. And then the one thing that I like doing during winter break is watching a lot of films. So, you know, there's one film that were on a lot of people's top 10 list, right? And it was Eighth Grade. And I saw that movie. And it was pretty good. It was very, very awesome. For me being a DJ and an eighth grade teacher, I'm like,
right.
Damn, how did I not hear about this movie earlier? And I did hear about it, but, you know, I'm glad I watched it. It's, I don't know, it's really good. It talks about how, I guess, complex it is being in middle school. What do you think? Do you think, like, when you teach 7th or an 8th grader, do you think that they're fully involved or invested in the academics?
I call it puberty, identity crisis, and state testing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of what it looks like to a young person as far as...
And that's probably the priority list, right?
Yeah.
Puberty, we're going through changes.
Puberty, identity crisis, and state testing.
Yeah, trying to fit in socially was what that movie was about, eighth grade. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't seen it, I really recommend it.
Yeah, it's the reason they say, you know, middle school is wild and it's weird. And, you know, I see the substitute. I actually saw her yesterday at Home Depot. She's always like, oh, yeah, it's wild up there. I mean, they respect you, but, oh, these kids, ooh, you know. So, and I think, you know, yeah, socially everybody's just growing up and still, you know, mimicking. And they're very smart now. Mm-hmm. But I think what's true about that age group is true in any, you know, it's unique to the United States and our culture here mm-hmm. that, no, yeah, the way that we socialize, we have kids in school, which is super awkward mm-hmm. for time to be developing as an adolescent. Because you're really, really, really like self-conscious and trying to figure out who you are and where you fit in desperately mm-hmm. because you're around all these people every day. And the average kid has no clue. So I hope that's what they're talking about on the movie, because that's dominant.
It's yeah. totally this little girl's, like, kind of her perspective on, you know, all these pressures and, you know, her parents trying to connect with her, but she's trying to be her own person. You know, it's just a tough time to be a human being, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've been there, so we get it. So anyway, if you haven't seen Eighth Grade, watch it. Any films that you cut this break, sir?
Let's see. My son was ODing on Home Alone 2. Hmm. And I watched Won't You Be My Neighbor last week.
Oh, the Mr. Rogers?
Mr. Rogers. Somebody told me it was going to make me cry. And hmm. it was so deep. And I was like, really, a Mr. Rogers movie? But I like PBS a lot to this day.
Was it a PBS, this one that you watched?
I don't know who made the film. I could check it out. But the fact that it was about Mr. Rogers and his work with PBS is what I was referring to.
Oh, okay. And so, okay.
You know, I was a Sesame Street kid and whatnot. And so it just made me interested. And so, yeah, and that was on Obama's list, ironically.
It was.
Yeah, Black Panther and this Mr. Rogers documentary. So connecting back to that. And so what I enjoyed about it was the information, man. It gave you a lot of background and personality and told you a lot of Mr. Rogers' motivations. You know, they talked about his character, his personality, but with any just genius of content and art, you just want to know what makes him tick and what drives them. And it seems like what drives him was to make a appropriate product used in the medium of television for really young kids. Like primary age, early childhood age. Mm-hmm. And so I can appreciate that he really put in his work as an educator, as well as a producer of television and puppeteer and et cetera. But he was very, 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 very meticulous about trying to do what's best for kids through his life experience and his perspective. And that really came through, that was a genuine motivation of his.
Yeah.
And he felt a lot of pressure because that wasn't the norm. The norm is, you know, wild and crazy television.
It's when you watch Mr. Rogers, the one thing, because I haven't seen the new documentary, but I remember seeing one a long time ago that was on PBS. That's what I thought you were talking about. But when you watch Mr. Rogers, it's like he's looking at you and talking to you directly.
Right.
Because he's looking right directly at the camera, and that's something that not a lot of people did.
And he's silent and calm. Yeah,
normally when you're watching TV show or something on TV, you're like a fly on the wall perspective of what, and you're watching a situation of a group of people deal with each other. He's like, hello, how are you today?
Right.
Because I know it sounds crazy, right? But growing up, you know, when you have working parents or, you know, you have, you're alone and your TV is the babysitter, which is the case for a large group of kids in the 80s, 90s, 70s, you know, whenever that was running. No one's ever asked a kid, like, how are you doing that day?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time someone ever was ever nice to them. And right. So,
and he was decades before that. He was 60s and 70s.
Yeah, 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing, yeah.
80s and
90s. 80s, yeah. By the time when I was watching it, was definitely like syndicated. It was already pre-recorded syndicated show, right?
Exactly.
Already filmed. He was probably chilling.
Yeah, he shows a wall of tapes in the movie where he said, these are all the films, and now I'm going to stopped doing the show for a while. And he came back later and started doing special programming, but they showed that scene where he had a wall full of tapes and said during the show that we're just going to start running reruns. So yeah, it was impressive, man. They hyped up the end and, you know, told me to expect to get emotional at the end, and it wasn't that. It was more like just the lengths he went to fulfill that mission that he was passionate about, you know, just clean programming with children in mind. It's interesting stuff.
So you saw Won't You Be My Neighbor? And yes. That was the name of the it's an hour and a half documentary film. Mm-hmm. You can watch right now. A 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. The one I saw about 4 or 5 years ago was called It's You I Like.
Ah.
And that one was really awesome. And I got kind of teary-eyed, not, you know, towards the end of it, but there is a part where the most compelling moment is when he's speaking to Congress, right? Mm-hmm. Or the Senate, or, you know, just... he's speaking to Congress and he's asking them, you know, they're asking, because I guess it was during the Nixon budget cuts and they're going to cut everything.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much he's like, all right, Mr. Rogers, what, you know, the one of the says like, what do you got to say about public program? He's like, sir, this is very important. This is necessary for the development, like, you know, all the things that you said. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just thought, if you don't like, Won't You Be My Neighbor? If It's You I Like is another documentary about the same guy.
Yeah, I would recommend Won't You Be My Neighbor still if you're interested in that kind of thing. This intergenerational dialogue, you know, what do past generations do for future generations? Which brings us here.
Yes, and to our next point, the song that you were singing at the beginning of this show, A Lot,
by 21
Savage. I was reading an article online from our friends at thefader.com.
Yeah, they're trying to put it in a frame. What frame do you put the song in before we talk about the fader? What do you see?
There's a song called A Lot, and it's got 21 Savage and J. Cole.
A Lot.
And I heard that song a lot this week.
I heard it on the way to your house.
Uh-huh,
a lot.
The producer's DJ Dahi. We just found out by looking this stuff up, and he gets a sample, like an old classic soul sample. It almost sounds mm-hmm. like the beginning of an old Kanye beat mm-hmm. from a Jay-Z record 15 right. years ago.
Pretty timeless.
But the drums come in, you know, Memphis as ever with 808s. And at first, it just sounds like a 21 Savage song.
Or it could be a J. Cole song. Yeah.
And then J. Cole comes in, second verse, and rips it. And there's a couple different things that he talks about in that song that we think is pretty awesome. Like,
well, first off, I think what 21 Savage is talking about is awesome.
Okay, go ahead.
I think he sounds really clear and refined, and you can hear his experience recording, and he's singing the blues in a similar way to what we've heard Kodak Black doing lately, you know, just kind of testimonial, confessional type of thing, and seems to be pretty candid about what he's been through and what he's grateful for, you know. Doesn't say too much about where he's going, but mm-hmm. it's just a classic, you know, hip-hop record with two different styles, and that's what the fader was really talking about.
Yeah, it says 21 Savage and J. Cole's A Lot record is the cross-generational exchange of rap needs, and this is written by Lawrence Burney. 21 Savage surprised a lot of people last summer when an Issa album he veered away from exclusive rapping about terror he would inflict on people. And I guess so.
It's which like is a, what he comes
you're
from.
Talking about. It's more mature 21 Savage
mm-hmm.
and a more mature J. Cole, who kind of in one of the lines kind of gives an olive branch to Tekashi 6ix9ine, who's currently arrested.
Yeah, he gives an olive branch to anybody listening to a 21 Savage record. I think people about J. Cole and 21 Savage as being from different sides of an argument about mm-hmm. hip hop. Which is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, J. Cole sends prayers to the incarcerated Tekashi 6ix9ine.
It'll be cool, man, when they start really digging into the content and really digging into the production. Like, I feel like at this stage of the culture, mm-hmm. they should be trying to get information from Dahi and 21 and J. Cole about this song more than even report it to us. Because, I don't know. I feel like it's a special record.
It is. It's good. It's a good way. And then he dropped the album. Some of the joints on there are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
21 Savagey. This one's the only one that stands out. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan at first. What I first got out of him when he came through doing his interviews and his big press was that he was dealing with a lot, pardon the pun, mm-hmm. of trauma. and personal loss. He was talking about all these different people who died before he was even an adult and how he deals with it and things like that. But he was very frank and candid about it. And it just made me, you know, want him to get some love and some care and some, you know, just see more in life, which was obviously his goal. So now he's got a song reflecting about it. So it's kind of cool to see. And then here comes J. Cole, you know, saying, even though I have a moral high ground and I'm not a thug and, you know, I can be, you know, conscious and whatnot. You know, me and Kendrick are known for XYZ versus 21 Savage, Tekashi being known for ABC. At the end of the day, it's about being who you are and letting your story progress. J. Cole's story has come a long way from when he was first introduced. And 21 Savage, now we can see that his story is, you know, he's growing. He's showing potential to be around. And so it's cool for J. Cole to just give a blessing. There's no competition there. Show love and make a nice record that kind of sounds like it's going to be a Wu-Tang record or something at the beginning. And then when the drums drop, it's like, sounds more like a UGK record.
Yeah, or Atlanta record or any of the, you know. Any of the Atlanta songs coming out right now.
Yeah. Right.
Or LA songs
something
coming out in the future.
Something big crit we're after. Right. In other words, that sound is now just boom. Yep. UGK.
Yes, that sound has blown up a lot. UGK. Right. 3-6 Mafia. There's a record. There's a song on the record that has that old ass and titties. And it's an old 3-6 Mafia song. Just like Plain Jane. A lot of other songs that are out right now. Anyway, when I was talking about testimonials and talking about rap music, kind of got me thinking about some of the people who have different things going on. Like, I know Bun B over the holidays released, is it Brew GK?
Brew GK?
Yeah, it's its own like UGK or Bun B beer. So, sounds like UGK, but it's Brew GK, and Devin the Dude had a beer. I don't know why I'm talking about beers, but there are...
Brew GK.
Yeah, there is. You talked about Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah.
Right? And what he's doing. He's not making beers. What is he doing?
Being amazing.
Okay.
He's got this smart store on Crenshaw and Slauson. A corner where... He experienced a lot of other types of activity.
Okay.
Growing up.
Negative activity.
Very significant. Well, you know, robust activity. And but point is, you go back in his music, you hear the way he's talking, you see this Victory Lap, Grammy nominated Victory Lap album, and you see a guy who's back in that neighborhood with a smart store.
Okay.
It's called the Marathon Clothing Store. And so you go in there and you get exclusive product that's available to you only at the store.
Okay.
But through, you know, VR coding, I should say.
Okay.
So maybe you get a shirt and then there's a code or a QR code or something. But the
QR, point, yes.
But a smart, you know what I'm talking about, a smart store. And so I just like, and also, I'm sorry, there's like a cafe, you know, one of those collaborative spaces. And he's also involved in that as well. I see him promoting it through social media, and I know he's involved in the actual cafe itself.
And then the things they sell in the cafe are made by young people in the community?
I think it's more like business and entrepreneurial incubators.
Okay.
And a place where people meet up and, you know, build companies and do modern commerce.
Okay, so it's kind of like a Starbucks, you know, but they ain't selling coffee. They're trying to help people connect and work, and have Wi-Fi, get things going.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So I'm trying to pull it up for you. Vector 90 is the name of it. Vector 90. Co-working space, cultural hub, inner city co-working space for entrepreneurs and creatives. It's in the Crenshaw district.
Inner city.
Real inner city.
Yes.
But, you know, it's got the kitchen, the conference rooms. You can build your plans from the ground up. You know, You got a desk, you got the conference room, you got your mailing address, and that's like your collaborative workspace. They've got the amenities that are all included and the plans. Like,
that's pretty cool. So they give you like a kind of like a P.O. box, things where you can get your mail and meet if you need to meet.
Cold brew on tap. I'm sure they're going to have Brew GK in stock. Shout out Bun B. Super fast internet, bike storage, front desk service, office supplies, professional and social events, community managers, cleaning, coffee, printers, mail, common areas, water, and a powerful regional network is the last amenity.
What's the name of this called again?
It's Vector. Called Vector 90. So that's the wave. And it's great to see where folks went from slanging out of the trunk, you know, maybe getting movies and acting. Now that hip hop grew up, you see so many younger and younger and younger people, and also all the way up to the original generation like us, who are using these resources and leveraging these resources from all this time this culture's developed and all the faculty and capacity and assets that are available to hip hop as a generation, as a culture, to where now all the, it's just so many different applications of this mindset. It's benefiting so many different sectors of life. And now people are going to their own communities and being that resource and that asset, like, directly. That's becoming a cool thing. Kendrick Lamar, Nipsey Hussle,
Trey the Truth, Jay Prince, what they do.
Yes, hip hop lawyers and architects and teachers and doctors and mayors and preachers, all from the culture, all from this generation. It's crazy to see.
And this hip hop architect.
So Nipsey Hussle is one of those guys.
So Nipsey Hussle,
yeah,
is doing a version of that in L.A. off Crenshaw. Right.
And meanwhile, in Detroit,
tell me about this hip hop architect.
Well,
I have it in my notes. Entrepreneur helping out communities.
The hip hop architect is cool, right?
Mm-hmm. And we looked at the website. I even tried to sign up our school for it, so hopefully we'll come back.
But before the hip hop architect, there's the other guy.
Who's that?
In Detroit. Who's building a smart community in an abandoned, closed-down school. So I got to give you that first, because that connects right with Nipsey. But we're talking about all these different permutations of what the culture can do for communities. Mm-hmm. And one example in Detroit, there's a hip-hop entrepreneur. He's worked with a lot of artists throughout the years. I believe Eminem and others. I'll pull it up. But he's turning Thompson Elementary School, which has been abandoned for 2 decades, into a $5 million smart neighborhood and urban farming operation called Parker Village. I'm reading this from Model D Media.
Okay.
Earlier, about a month ago. So it becomes an event center, co-working space, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math lab, and an incubator for new businesses. You see how it's kind of the same?
Yes.
Same way. And so now these new models of education, and where there's a lot of applied arts and learning as well. So his company will be there. There'll be a broadcast area and 2 studios.
Wow.
But sustainable designs. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a solar array plan for the roof, a wind and geothermal energy technology that's being considered, aquaponic urban farm, 2 hoop houses linked to a fish barn, which helps irrigate the crops that are located in a lot adjacent to the community center. So rainwater collection, melting snow connection to irrigate gardens, use that water for toilet flushing, just smart. Garden cafe and a residential community around the school grounds.
Making something amazing out of nothing.
Hip hop grew up.
Yeah. So making something, that's abandoned and people like, oh, said it was going to be a failure. Making the best out of that. Sounds, everything you said was like amazing.
Right. And I was also trying to go back to some of his pedigree, like the work he put in.
Okay.
Let's see.
I'm still tripping on this Vector 90 thing.
He was involved with Eminem, Proof, J Dilla. Yeah, Vector 90, the Smart Village. This brother's name is Juan Shannon. They call him a heavy hitter on the local scene. He's been involved with, like I said, Dilla, Proof, Eminem, entrepreneur who stepped out and created platforms for up-and-comers. And he's got Proof's old manager vouching for him. He did a Detroit hip hop soundtrack back in the day.
Wow.
And so he's done a lot of work here, it says. And he's from this place called Highland Park, and now a smart community is going back into the hood because hip hop grew up. Now, you mentioned the hip hop architect.
Yes, which I thought, since you were talking about the people from Detroit, that they're mixed into the same person.
No, it's just Detroit is that big of a deal that, you know.
Yeah, my sister lives up there and is in education, and mm-hmm. a lot of people are in education trying to do something like that, revitalize communities. So, yes, explain hip hop architect.
Well, your movie Eighth Grade really explains what's going on in the mindset of a lot of young people in adolescence in a real crucial age.
Not my movie, but the movie I watched.
Yes, yes. The one. My movie was what? Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Yes, but, documentary. Yeah.
But yes, and so, yeah, these new models and these new ideas for serving young people are just popping up, and it's cool to see. So the hip hop architect guy is building camps that can go to any community. But specifically,
I think that's awesome because he's come to Austin before. We're looking at it.
Yeah, we saw an incredible music video from a camp here in Austin. It looked like it was at Houston Tillerson University.
Yes, it was.
So this hip hop architect, his name's Michael Ford. He's tapped to design the Universal Hip Hop Museum in the Bronx. I'm reading this on Curbed online. But he's looking at the intersection of architecture and hip hop. It's like guys like my cousin or something. I don't even know him yet. He wrote a thesis about hip-hop inspired architecture and design while he was studying at the University of Detroit Mercy.
Wow.
And basically he's teaching folks and using hip-hop music and lyrics, and they're creating new music according to what we saw, but also we'll have people designing based on, say, I read about where they were using the lyrics of The Message, and so the art they were creating as architects had broken glass and, you know, different, like, pee on the ground. And I know that sounds crazy, but artistically speaking,
yes,
interpreting it from music. So this guy is, again, trying to leverage these resources and go anywhere where they'll have him and really teach architecture skills. He said 3%, for example, of architecture, the profession, is African-American. So he's saying there's a lot of room to grow, but if you connect that back to the other guy who's designing the smart community, mm-hmm. it makes sense. The fact that this guy's designing a museum. You got Meek Mill and Nipsey Hussle and entrepreneurs creating buildings and communities and businesses and networks, right?
Yes.
But somebody's got to design the buildings. Ah.
Hip hop architect.
Crazy.
Yes.
So it's just hitting at every angle, right?
It is. And it's kind of like creating the workforce, that you don't have to, like, you know, bid for someone else to do. Like, hey, there's only a community knows how to do that. Someone in-house knows how to do that, you know.
So right.
I think that's awesome that he's doing that. And I'm looking at his Instagram, and he was just in Dallas 2 months ago.
Mm.
He was just in Austin, at least in 2017. But he's going everywhere doing this camp thing, hopefully.
Popping up.
Yes. So I think that is the game, like you're talking about, is figuring out ways to help out the community. And then the community is going to figure out how to get better and help other people out. It's like a positive, you know, it's viral positively, right? We're spreading this out. And I think that's just amazing, man. I think after school programs is the new way of, like, communities get involved in education. What do you think, Babu?
I think, to make it more clear,
yeah,
out of school programs.
You're right. Out of school, after school, extracurricular activities, right? With professional and, you know, community and social justice kind of mindset of helping the youth out. That's what I've been seeing.
The Netflix of education.
The Netflix of education. You're right. Something that, you know, hopefully in a couple of years we can jump into more fully. You know, I already kind of volunteer with one after school program, Breakthrough. Working with them is awesome. And then some of the people that they, you know, were once students, right, come back as mentors come back, as instructional coaches come back and help the younger or someone else's little brother and sister and keep that that community or that program or that mentorship, that ladder, widening it, making it wider so other people can participate. So I just think it's awesome that, you know, the hip hop artists are helping out their own communities in the same way.
It's a beautiful thing to see.
Mm-hmm.
NB?
Yes, it is. So there's coming back to with all this downtime, right? And all these shows and TVs, shows and movies on Netflix that people are watching. One thing that I haven't seen yet, but it keeps popping up all over on IG mm-hmm. and Snapchat and Twitter is this R. Kelly movie. Mm. Or, I mean, documentary, I'm sorry.
Mm.
There's a Lifetime released an R. Kelly documentary. I think it's like Stories, My Story with R. Kelly or something. And it talks about different young women who, you know, were either background singers or were part of the recording process or were, had some kind of affiliation with R. Kelly. And they're kind of telling their side of the story where, oh, he did this to us, he did that. You know, I don't know. Have you seen it?
No.
What have you heard of it besides what I said? Well, pretty much the same thing.
Yes. There's a lot of people saying, like, mute R. Kelly. And internet is really on R. Kelly. I believe it's called Surviving R. Kelly.
Surviving R. Kelly.
But the mainstream that I'm getting from the internet is, oh, he's terrible. That's why we should never listen to him. And
I remember a long time ago.
It's nothing new.
It's nothing new if you're really into music like people like you. But to the average person, they're like, oh, R. Kelly, yeah, he's got that song. And then,
right.
You know, he pees on a 12-year-old girl and they catch it on video. And then he's bad for a couple months. Then he comes back with, you know, the snake dance or I don't know, whatever, like a new hit. I remember a long time ago, you used to call him he's the Pied Piper of R&B.
That's what he used to call himself, the Pied Piper of R&B.
Or tell me the Pied Piper story from the beginning. What is the Pied Piper story? It's like an old nursery rhyme.
The Pied Piper story. I know there's a musician, and kids are following him. And he leads them somewhere.
It's a German fairy tale. I just looked it up. The Pied Piper of Hamelin. Or Pan Piper. Rat Catcher. Whatever. It's a character of legend, town of Hamelin in Germany. Legend dates back to the Middle Ages, describing a piper dressed in multicolored clothing who was a rat catcher and hired the town.
Catching rats? That's not kids.
Yeah, but he used to do that. He used to catch, that's what, he catched the mice. And the mice would, like towns would have problems with the mice, and they'd call this dude, and then, you know, right, the mice would get away. That was a version I've heard.
I thought the Pied Piper was somebody attracting children. Let's see. The Mandela effect.
Background. Number of theories is the Wikipedia page on the Pied Piper is very long. I need to find another source that's a little bit shorter. Because they're giving backgrounds, different theories, plots. Wow. I just need a quick one paragraph on the Pied Piper.
He was a rat catcher.
He caught the mice.
So R. Kelly's not catching rats.
No. But you... I remember the story that you told me was R. Kelly a long time ago was a Pied Piper. And the Pied Piper would play his flute or whatever, his instrument. And the children would follow him. And you were kind of saying the same thing.
I made that up. Because Pied Piper's catching rats.
He said, I started calling myself the Pied Piper. This is the old...
Yeah, what did he say?
Because I don't GQ know what I'm talking magazine.
About. Oh, and the Piper advanced, and the children followed, and when all were in to the very last, the door in the mountainside shut fast. Based on real events, which evolved over the years into a fairy tale made to scare children. So the Piper returned and led the children away, never to be seen again, just as he did the rats. Okay, so I didn't make it up.
So he okay, so that makes sense. So he's like, hey, I'm helping out because I got the rats out, but then also, hey, stole your children too.
Yep.
That was crazy. And considering all this stuff about him doing young things with young girls.
There it is. As
the Pied Piper.
I thought I was lost. I thought I just made it up. The Mandela effect.
It's okay.
All right. So, yeah. And so, yeah. The claim is that R. Kelly, you know, I did read that his brother on the documentary says it was, he basically implies that it was weird that he married like an older woman because that wasn't really his thing. And obviously, you know, the excitement over when he married Aaliyah, which I remember from back in the day.
That was weird because I was in eighth grade. Like, I think me and Aaliyah are, she's like a year or two different than, you know, in age from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when Aaliyah was really big and I was in eighth grade. You're like, what? She's getting married? That's weird.
Right.
For someone eighth or ninth grade age to be marrying somebody.
Right. Somebody who's
probably, but I guess, 30. You know, when you're like, in, like, I think it's, you got like the Hollywood, the LA, the New York, that studio. Oh, I'm a star.
Mm-hmm.
It's like kind of those things don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, ah, Elvis Presley's. Like, I remember Kelly Cullion was saying something on this. Like, man, they didn't say nothing when Elvis was marrying 14-year-olds, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's kind of like this Hollywood radio big star thing makes people forget about a bunch of stuff, right?
That's true.
Because if he wasn't Robert Kelly, right? If he wasn't the big musician, would he be in jail for these things? You know, if these, like, if Aaliyah was blonde hair and blue eyes, would it?
You would think make so.
A difference, like,
John Legend was proud.
Yeah, I saw that.
To.
He's proud that this R. Kelly documentary came to light, right?
Right. He feels like we're exposing a, you know, a rapist. Is what John Legend's saying.
So this,
I say, R. Kelly is a musical genius, and he's not my leader. That's about all I got to say about R. Kelly.
That's okay. That's fair.
Yep.
Makes good music, but maybe we don't partake in the extracurriculars. He said he started calling himself I started calling myself the Pied Piper. He explains when I started using the flute sound in my music. He starts listening to songs which he used to. He mentions in Fiesta Snake, Step in the Name of Love. I was a Pied Piper, you know, blew a flute. I started calling myself the Pied Piper because of the flute.
Hmm.
But I say, did you understand why people thought that was strange? He says, absolutely not. He replies, I was thinking about the flute, you know. This is a GQ interview from 2016. But I continue, you know the story of the Pied Piper. He shakes his head. I don't know really the story of the Pied Piper. I don't read stories of all.
What year is this?
2016. So wow. Just recently they brought this up.
So I knew before he knew?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think that's possible?
So probably Piper was hired by the people handling to Larry Towns Rats his music, and then he also had the adults refuse to pay him. So the Pied Piper took revenge by delivering their children and killing them.
Yeah, and he doesn't own his music. He doesn't own his masters, so.
Kelly?
Yeah. So that fits too. He made some 19-minute song, man, like within the past year or so, and put all that stuff out there.
Who owns it?
I think he just sold it to record companies at a young age. He was a jive artist.
That's, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So everything he puts out in someone else's.
Right. But he's not our leader because he's not doing, you know, out of school programs that I'd really want to be a part of. You know?
Of course not.
So they talking about,
oh my God, could you imagine that? It's like, yeah, I was like, hi, yo. Oh, wow. You guys... What's your after-school program? No, it's really, who's your founder? R. Kelly. No, thank you.
He goes back to the choir room where his old choir teacher teaches and networks with students and gets them in the studio sometimes
good
at the same time.
Program.
Yeah, you know. Just saying.
That's too funny. All right, I got to switch the subject.
Please.
So I was tasked recently by a friend of mine. Del Rio is a really cool hometown because I get a lot of important or people who do important things in different, you know, like in all walks of life. But we're all from the same hometown. So one of my hometown friends works with a person who, a Mexican American person who's actually putting a bid to run for president in 2020. So this is kind of a big deal. I don't think, I can't remember, at least in my lifetime, a Mexican-American person running for president. Can you?
No.
Marco Rubio is Cuban-American. And I think, I don't know, like if you meet, you know, Cubans, it's like Europeans, it's like Argentinians or something. It's like, so it's a little bit different. That's all I'm saying. I still think it's cool that a Latinx person ran, but, you know, Mexican American kind of hits more home, especially with all the things that are happening right now between Mexico and U.S. and presidents demanding walls being built. So I think that's cool that a Mexican American is running for president. But back to the reason I'm talking about is I was tasked as a DJ to pick some campaign songs
for this. A Mexican American running for president is awesome. From it's a perspective awesome. Of the community that I work with, young folks, I've been immersed in mostly Mexican American, so to speak, adolescence for most of this decade.
Because you teach in East Austin.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So knowing the history, and you say it kind of hits home. I mean, we're in Texas. And we could also be in California, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico, and all these other places. And we're still in old Mexico. So it's just such a huge influence and interest in history. But I also teach 7th grade history, so that's probably part of it too.
Yeah.
But I think that's awesome. So I'm wondering what songs you picked.
Man.
No, it's not a hip-hop playlist.
Luckily, you know, campaign songs, it's okay. Like, first of all, being a DJ and just playing a song in general, you're kind of a small politician anyway. You're trying to figure out, all right, what song is the lowest common denominator that can play where everyone will kind of be happy, but no one will be like, what the hell is that? Because the worst thing you want is half the crowd or more than half the crowd being like, what the heck? That's a whack song.
When's the last time that happened to you?
It happens at more like at private events, you know, when you don't fully know the people or their guests.
When's the last time that happened to you?
Oh, it's been a while. But, you know, I aim for like a high percentage of interaction or, you know, if I hit a song, like the reaction better be a good 60-70% of people like, hey, you know, really getting into it. And so I guess like I hold myself to a higher DJ standard when I get a reaction from the crowd. So it's kind of, I'm looking for a reaction. So when it comes to like picking political campaigns for this person, he's obviously Mexican American and he looks like it, right? So I don't think I gotta pick a Latin song to remind people again.
Right.
So a lot of people be like, oh man, I think I posted on Instagram, like, hey, I have this task of picking a song for Mexican American running for president. What do y'all suggest? And I got like some suggestions like Mi 45, which is like a huge like narco song. And like a bunch of like things like yeah, like, really show the brown pride. But really it's like his face, you know, shows it. And so I really don't have to talk about that. But
communicating through music on a national
music
level. What playlist do you pick? It's major.
My first song is because in political campaigns, like almost all of them besides Obama, right, were like kind of a rock song in the modern era.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So actually the song I really wanted to pick was We're Not Gonna Take It Anymore by Twisted Sister. But unfortunately, it was picked by Donald J. Trump in his last campaign.
Oh, really?
He picked that song.
Wow.
And I was thinking, man, if he had someone pick that song, that's pretty smart. But it's kind of cool. That would have been my first choice, but I didn't pick for this, you know, person, because he's obviously going to be a Democrat. So you don't want the same one as the other party. The first song I picked was Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz. And it, like, but it sounded like that. Yes, but it wasn't as old in generation as
Tina Turner.
But I was thinking, like, you know, the other rock songs that people would pick was obviously like AC/DC, right? Or
Rolling Stones.
Yeah, or Journey.
Right.
Or, you know, something like Bon Jovi, like something like that. Like, this one kind of felt a little bit more modern. And so that's why I picked it. And also, it's because Lenny Kravitz, right? And so it's a African American, has Jewish roots. This is a lot of people we're trying to rally. So I picked that one. And also I like the song too. I picked Fortunate Son, an older song, actually, Creedence Clearwater Revival. It's on the Forrest Gump soundtrack. They're going to war. But I like the words in that song. Then I picked an Austin.
Creedence Clearwater Revival. Mm-hmm. At ACL, I did a cover of Bad Moon Rising.
Mm.
I sung it. And Gary came out, Gary Clark Jr., and played on it with us.
That's like, awesome.
That's like when I called him out, that was the first song we did. I got to sing a Creedence Clearwater Revival song for like thousands of people.
So, Are You Gonna Go My Way's first pick, Fortunate Son, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Then I went Austin-y with it. Fight the Power by Brownout, the Brownout version.
My favorite band.
And then your favorite rap group too, right?
Public Enemy?
Mm-hmm.
Not really, but close enough. Top 10 for sure.
So I really like that one just because it, you get the, you know, it's like Fight the Power, you know, you get that part felt, mm-hmm. you know, in your heart. And then also it's like kind of the instrumental Latin version, mm-hmm. Brownout version of it makes it live. So I picked that as number three. Number four, Aerosmith, Living on the Edge. What's going on in the world today?
Mm-hmm.
Then Van Halen, Right Now, which I think some people have used in certain campaign events, but never as a campaign song.
Right.
Then I picked Dolly Parton, 9 to 5. And then you keep laughing, even when I selected it in the playlist and even right now. What's so funny about Dolly Parton, 9 to 5?
It just doesn't feel presidential to me.
It doesn't.
No. Song's fine. But what's presidential about working 9 to 5?
Okay, I get you that one.
Yeah. I like the song.
I just think it's like, it's time for a blue collar president. So I don't know. I just think like that mentality. People working hard. I don't know. That's why I picked it. And I like the song.
Why is it time for a blue collar president?
I think blue collar purse people are underrepresented in government.
That's true. That's true.
Or it's not even blue collar, just people who work 9 to 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
Blue and white collar.
Mm-hmm.
People who work.
Mm-hmm.
Not people with yachts. Which leads me into my next song.
But you got this new generation that's working at Vector 90.
Oh, you're right. It's a different 9 to 5.
Yeah, but they're not president aged just yet. Some of them are. Some of them are.
But they're voting aged.
Right.
So I get where you're going with this. Renegades of Funk,
mm-hmm.
by Rage Against the Machine.
Sounding like Public Enemy. Was that right after Brownout?
No, it was after Aerosmith, Van Halen, Dolly Parton.
Okay, I got lost.
Then James Brown, Living in America. I needed a James Brown song on this playlist.
Yep.
And so.
Good choice.
I had to get this one. Then, if you're running against President Donald Trump in 2020, I picked a Ray Charles song, Hit the Road, Jack. And then Michael Jackson, Black or White. Then Survivor, Eye of the Tiger. I went back to another classic rock competitive song.
You gotta have that or We Will Rock You.
Mm-hmm. Then a McFadden and Whitehead disco song, Ain't No Stopping Us Now.
Mm-hmm. No stopping.
Then I had to get a Latin song in there, even though, you know, this presidential candidate is clearly Latinx, Latino, Mexican American. So I picked Mi Tierra from Gloria Estefan.
Mm-hmm.
Last one, before you reminded me, before you show me a song that I should have added, I put Just Fine by Mary J. Blige, which doesn't sound very presidential at all, but then again, why should it not?
I think it's presidential.
That one's official.
I think that's what you're trying to do with 9 to 5, is that right there.
Reach women.
Yeah, just connecting with common folk.
Mm-hmm.
I think that song does a good job of that because, you know, anybody who would enjoy a song like Just Fine, you know, you're overcoming some struggle to need that song and feel that song.
Yeah, you're right.
There's a sense of accomplishment, you know, over time that just is embedded in that record's message. But Tell me about this Latinx. What do you mean, Ricardo Almeida, when you use that term?
You don't know about Latinx? Latinx
is not that I don't know.
Okay.
But so I'm customer focused. So, and this is Hip Hop Grew Up on the Yak.
You know, I am on this social justice tip a little bit. You know, I'm not a formally trained teacher.
Right.
But, you know, my coworker has some of the terminology when we use to describe ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm Mexican, I'm going to let you know what I'm at. My parents are from Mexico. I'm born in America. I'm an American citizen, right? And then, so I guess technically by the U.S. Census, it categorizes me as white, right, Babu?
Maybe.
Because even though my DNA says I'm 40% Native American and, you know, about another 40% Iberian Peninsula or European, that makes me white. But the U.S. Census, since you said the Nixon age, started classifying us as Hispanic, also white. So it's kind of like a little, you know, subcategory under white. So it could be Hispanic or Latino. Or Latina, but we say Latinx because of the, you know, the whole gender debate. So people don't know what to do, you know, identify themselves. So you kind of leave it as Latinx, kind of leaves it as, the whole gender rule, but also just kind of like, man, it's something new, something different.
So let's say there's a self-identifying white person hipping you to this lingo. What are they calling themselves now?
I heard it from a Latin person.
Okay. I wonder who else gets the X or what happens to all the other terminology.
I think it's whatever you feel comfortable. I've never felt comfortable like switches like, oh, you don't say my parents are from, or, you know, I'm Mexican American or this.
Right. You don't even talk like that.
Yeah. And that's kind of the norms, like, I'm like, because, you know, when kids say, oh, I'm Mexican, but they're really not.
Right.
Right. They're born in America, obviously.
Right.
They're just like me. This seems like a new, better way of identifying. Like,
okay. Now, isn't English Latin?
The language?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a little bit different. It's like Anglican, Celtic. They have a little bit different swag. At least it's categorized in the books as different than Spanish. And French.
But it's got to be Latin if there's all these cognates between Spanish and English.
They're closely related.
Yeah.
But there's also like...
It's got the same
Latin. Germanic words that's closer to than Spanish.
Okay. Because it seems dominated by the same Latin root.
And then like the way that you, in English, you put the noun and verb structure is different in Spanish.
So
it's like it's...
So what does Latin mean?
Latin means of the Iberian Peninsula.
The Iberian Peninsula.
But not French, Franc, because that's like a different tribe. You know, to divide the tribes into like the people with brown hair, I think. It would be Latin, right? If you're from Spain or Italy and the countries they conquered.
Were Spaniards and the countries they conquered. So it does describe like somebody who's never left Spain in the first place as well.
You know what? Let's look it up.
You see the difference there? Like, that's a wide range of people to be that Latin.
It's pretty much the entire...
Is somebody from Seville, Spain, Latin?
I think so.
Okay. I never thought about this. You?
Well, it says person of Latin American origin.
Latin America. Okay, so Latin means Latin American.
And
Western Hemisphere, Romance languages, Spanish, Portuguese, French. And then I see it's Ibero or Hispanic America. So no, if you're from Seville, Spain, you're not Latin. You feel me?
Gender neutral term sometimes used in lieu of Latina.
Like, do you have to be colonized to be Latin? It seems like it.
Seems like it too.
Right?
Yeah.
There's no Latin colonizers, are there? If that's the case, it's kind of like Hispanic. It's another term that, because that's why I was saying, like, what do other people call themselves? Yeah.
It's a term often used in the United States to refer to people cultural ties to Latin America, in contrast to Hispanic, which is a demonym that include Spaniards.
It sounds like
Hispanic includes Spaniards. Latino, you know, doesn't.
You know what it sounds like? It really means non-white America. Like if you take North, South, Central, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, let me know if you see anything that disagrees with that. But it looks like Latin means non-white America.
Non-white America.
That's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. That's a good argument. So you think they created that term to separate it? Separate the folks.
Because there is a, I don't know. I mean, of course, that's what classification does. But Latin Europe is listed as separate. Latin Church, Teutonic Europe, Anglo-Saxon America, Slavic Europe. Latin America. The origins are the French occupation of Mexico.
It sounds like the definition kind of changes as the decades.
Right. But it does sound like the conquered class of Americans compared to the ruling class is what I'm getting out of it.
The conquered
class. At its origin. Am I missing something?
No. Okay. Sounds pretty good. I'm trying to think.
Brown American. But not from enslaved populations. So it does, you know, pretty neatly divide people, or try to, right?
And that is Latino. Not Spain, but all the other countries that they and, I guess, Portugal conquered.
France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Latino.
Is France on the Iberian Peninsula?
I don't think it's... They could...
Who knows? Anyway.
It's really... I mean, it's next to Spain, right? So, let's look at...
And speaking of classifications... You talked earlier about Obama's list.
Uh-huh.
He had a little bit of class on his list, too. Like some of the picks, he had one of my songs of the year, which is Turning Me Up by BJ the Chicago Kid. Uh-huh. That Chance the Rapper song you like.
France is not in the Iberian Peninsula.
Right. Leon Bridges from Texas made the list.
Yes, I saw that.
Cardi B, I Like It.
I saw your song, yes.
Which, of course... I mean, I liked that song the first 3 seconds I heard it on a. Like,
that was a Apple really commercial. Good redo of that song, man.
Really smart.
And which is Cardi B was on everyone's nerves because she was on everything. That was a great song.
Great song. From the first second you ever heard in your life. Like right away.
The drums.
Clearly. And then J. Cole made it with Kevin's Heart.
Mm-hmm.
J. Cole and J.I.D. keeps coming on my radio.
And that whole J. Cole record was really good. One for 2018, too.
K.O.D.? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's on the top of a lot of people's lists. And J. Cole is really trying to... I mean, not even trying to. He's battling at the highest level. You know, he wants the crown. And since he's in the running, he's fighting for it. As far as just that, you know, mainstream rap king of the time when he was the king. He's on that level. He's fighting for that.
Yeah.
You know, mainly, I think in most people's minds who look through that frame, comparing him to Kendrick, Drake, you know, the guys that are really up there.
And that's a cool way of ending this week, because we started with J. Cole.
Mm-hmm.
He's on with J. Cole.
He makes his albums with no features, but he's killing features on everybody's album this year. And now we hear him on the J.I.D.
Yes, and I want to get into that and the rest of Obama's list when we come back next week, man. But thank y'all for tuning into Hip Hop Grew Up.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
It grew up.